Good evening. This is Peter Tobin introducing Lux Radio Theater. Tonight and every Monday night at this time, Lux Radio Theater presents for your entertainment the finest in radio drama. This week we bring you Home at Seven by R.C. Sheriff. Every weekday evening, gentle, mild-mannered, middle-aged David Preston would return from his office punctually at seven. Imagine his astonishment when, on this particular evening, he arrives home to find his wife in a state of near desperation and demanding an explanation for his failure to return the previous evening, particularly as he is firmly convinced that it is a Monday and she insists that it's Tuesday. Dramatic as Sheriff's famous play was on the stage, it becomes even more so now that it has been adapted for radio. Listen in a few moments to Home at Seven. And now, Act One of tonight's Lux Radio Theatre presentation, Home at Seven.
Hello, my dear.
David! Oh, my darling, my darling!
Janet, what's the matter? What's happened?
Oh, David, it's been terrible. I thought I'd go mad. What happened to you? Where have you been?
Where have I been? To the office, of course. Where do you think I've been?
But last night and all today.
I've never seen you like this before, Janet. If you didn't feel well, why didn't you ring me at the bank? You only had to telephone and I'd have come home at once.
I've been in torment all day and all last night. I thought I was going mad.
All last night? What do you mean, dear, all last night?
When you didn't come home.
Janet, dear, I'm always home at seven every night. There's nothing for you to worry about. It's been just an ordinary day, dear, just like any other Monday.
But today's Tuesday.
Monday, darling.
It's Tuesday, David.
You're tired, Janet. You've got confused. I do know what day of the week it is. Yesterday was Sunday, don't you remember? After supper, we listened to the radio. You remember the serial, that Jane Austen story?
David, just a moment. The evening paper you brought in. Look, Tuesday.
Extraordinary. Well, they don't often make mistakes like that. They only must have given me the wrong paper.
Then you'd better look at this morning's paper.
Well, the morning paper isn't here because I took it with me to the office. You know I always take it with me, Janet.
You didn't take this morning's paper because you weren't here to take it. Tuesday, the 27th, you see? We've always understood one another, David. If you suddenly felt you wanted to go away and be alone for a while, well, that's perfectly all right. I should have understood. But why couldn't you have telephoned and told me you weren't coming home?
Something I don't understand. It has happened, Janet. You must give me time to think. Anybody at the bank could tell you I've been there all day.
You've not been at the bank all day. I rang the manager. When you didn't come in, I thought you'd missed your train at Cannon Street. Then 8 o'clock came. I was terribly worried because you always telephone if you're going to be late. I thought you must have had an accident. It was nearly 9 o'clock. I was so terribly anxious. And then I rang the police.
Rang up the police?
But what did you expect me to do? Did you expect me to lock up the house and go to bed as if nothing had happened? The sergeant on duty said he'd inquire at the hospitals and let me know if anyone had been brought in. Later, he rang up to say they couldn't trace anyone who might be you. I said I'd go to bed, but I sat in this chair all night, waiting and listening. When the bank was open, I rang up the manager. He said you hadn't come in this morning, but you left the previous night as usual, at 5 o'clock. You said you left at 6, David. You told me you always leave at 6.
That's right, Janet. I always do, at 6.
I asked him again because it surprised me. He repeated it. He said you always leave at 5.
He must have made a mistake or you misunderstood him.
Well, about noon he rang again and said you hadn't come in. Since then, I've just sat here for hours and hours and I thought I was going mad. And then you walk in, David, as if nothing had happened and say I dreamt it all.
I can only tell you one thing, Janet. Unless I've taken leave of my senses, I've been at the bank all day and done the usual work I always do on Monday. But look at my clothes. Do I look as if I wandered about all night? Where could I have washed and shaved? But there must be some explanation, some quite simple explanation. One thing I'm certain of, Janet, I'm certain that I'm telling you the truth. Good evening, Doctor.
Well, it's quite a while since we last met.
At Christmas, yes, we had quite a good crowd that evening.
Keeps you pretty busy, Treasurer, of a big club like that.
It does rather, takes a good deal of time, but I enjoy it.
It's a big thing.
It is now. I helped to start it 10 years ago. We began with 15 members.
Well, shall we sit down? You're looking very well.
I feel well, perfectly well. My wife told you on the phone what happened?
Yes, she told me everything you told her. As a matter of fact, I knew last night that something had happened.
How?
I understand from your wife that you left for the city in the usual way yesterday morning. You came home this evening at your usual time, believing it was the same day, when it was actually a day later.
Yes. It's all so queer, Doctor. I got home, as I always do, just at 7. I was feeling perfectly all right. I found my wife in a terrible state. When she told me what had happened, I thought she must have dreamt it. I couldn't believe it until I saw the date on the newspapers, and the bank manager rang up and said I hadn't been there all day. I still can't believe it. It's like a nightmare. From the moment I left home yesterday morning until the moment I came in tonight, I was absolutely convinced I had spent a normal day at the bank.
There's only one thing that could have happened. There must have been a lapse of memory that apparently lasted for a full 24 hours.
But where could I have been for 24 hours? Surely somebody would notice a man wandering aimlessly about. If it was away in the country, it might be possible, but it was London. And where could I have washed and shaved? Look, there's still a crease in my trousers. My coat and hat were perfectly clean and brushed.
Well, that's what we've got to try and find out. Have you been quite well recently? No headaches or unaccountable restlessness or sleeplessness?
No, I don't think so.
Nothing seriously worrying you?
Nothing to account for this.
Wasn't there anything unusual in your journey to London?
Nothing at all.
Did anything unusual happen in your work that day? I mean, any special worry or problem that might have disturbed you?
No, it was perfectly normal day's work.
And you left the bank at your usual time?
Well, there's one thing. It's really such a trivial, harmless thing that it couldn't possibly have any connection with all this. You must understand that my wife and I are perfectly happy together.
I'm sure of that.
Beyond the small domestic arguments that every normal couple have, we've never had a serious difference in our lives, and we never shall.
Mrs. Preston told me that herself.
But everybody's got little things they like and dislike. My wife doesn't like alcohol, but like a lot of other men, I enjoy a glass of sherry in the evening when I finish my day's work.
And so do I.
It's been a habit of mine for some while to drop in at a little place and have a glass of sherry on the way to the station every evening.
Well, why not?
It was just after the war. We were short of staff, and I was working until 7 every night. At 6 o'clock, I used to go out and have my drink and go back to finish my work. It was a little pub in a side street near the bank, run by a brother and two sisters. Peggy, the younger sister, is under 30, I imagine. I know what you're thinking, Doctor.
Oh, not at all. Why should I?
It was all perfectly harmless. We'd pass the time of day and have a joke or two while I sat there drinking my sherry. And about 2 years ago, this late work finished, and I was free to leave the office at the usual time at 5 o'clock. I was rather disappointed to think this pleasant half hour would have to end. It didn't open until 6, of course, and I could scarcely hang about for an hour waiting.
So you just went round to the side door?
Yes. I suppose it was rather silly not to tell my wife, but I just let her think I still worked at the office until 6 and then walked straight to the station for the train home.
Well, I don't think that's very terrible. I imagine a good many other city men do the same.
Well, if I suddenly told her now that I had been doing this, she might think it was somehow connected with what happened yesterday, but I'm sure it isn't.
You went there as usual last night?
I arrived just after 5, left at 6 in good time to catch my train, yes.
Nothing unusual happened?
Nothing at all. I just sat there in their private sitting room having my sherry and a sandwich. Then we all went into the bar and had a game of darts. I remember 6 o'clock striking from St. Paul's as I said good night.
Well, then it all boils down to the next hour, because normally you would have been home at 7. Can you remember how you were feeling on the walk to the station? Any incidents on the way?
I was just feeling happy, contented, like I always do, walking to the station after my sherry.
And you arrived at Cannon Street in good time for your train?
Yes. There's just one curious little thing. I don't think I'd even remember it. if I weren't searching round for something out of the ordinary, but I do remember a curious feeling as I went into the station and looked up at the big clock. I can't exactly describe it. It's just a vague, uncertain kind of feeling. I remember looking very hard at the clock, so hard that I can see it quite distinctly now, the white face, the big black hands. It pointed to a 6:15.
Now, that may be something.
And then I remember, rather dazed, uncertain feeling as I went for my train. I had to think before I could recollect the number of the platform, although it's always 5 every night.
You remember the journey home?
It's such a routine journey that I don't remember any special incidents. I think the compartment was full. I think I had a nap.
You slept on the journey?
There's nothing unusual about that. I nearly always take a nap on the way home. Wake up by force of habit just before the train gets into Bromley.
Was there anybody you knew on the train coming down?
I don't think so,
no. You're not really quite certain about that journey?
Not absolutely.
Oh, I was wondering whether you'd finished.
Yes, come in, Mrs. Preston.
I'm not disturbing
you. Not at all. I think I can promise you one thing, Mrs. Preston. Your husband's quite well in himself. A case of lost memory is disturbing, naturally, but there's no need to be alarmed. I haven't been your doctor long enough to know very much about you. Tell me, have you ever had a serious illness or accident, Mr. Preston?
No, never. I've always kept very well.
What were you doing during the war?
At the bank, as usual. I was an air raid warden down here.
You went through some bad bombing?
Oh, yes. We were right in Flybomb Alley here, you know.
Can you remember any especially bad experience?
There was that one in Elm Tree Road, David.
Yes, I had a narrow squeak that night. A fly bomb came down on a piece of wasteland just behind the houses. I wasn't more than 100 yards away, and naturally the blast was pretty bad. I wasn't hit by anything, but I was deaf in this ear for a few days.
Did you have medical attention?
Oh, I didn't think it necessary. I felt all right, bar the deafness, and that soon wore off.
Well, a shock of that kind plays funny tricks on you sometimes. Perfectly normal people may have a thing like this happen without even remembering the original cause of it. It may come from a severe shock, like this one of yours, or it may be the result of a long period of strain.
You mean there's permanent injury?
No, not at all. It may be a good thing in a way. It may clear the system of a suppressed nervous condition. Once it's over, you're free of it for good.
If only I knew when it happened and what I was doing for all those hours.
I think we're fairly clear when it happened. You remember feeling a little queer at Cannon Street Station?
Oh, you didn't tell me that, Dave.
But I only remembered it a few minutes ago.
Now, we've accounted for the whole of yesterday until Mr. Preston arrived at the station on his way home. We've got to find out whether his memory was actually going when he had the strange feeling he describes, or whether he was coming back. You see what I mean?
You mean he lost his memory at Cannon Street last night and stayed there until this evening?
It's possible.
But surely the station master or somebody would have done something.
Oh, he may have gone into the restaurant and had supper. May have gone out of the station and walked back to the city. You haven't any dim recollection of anything like that, Mr. Preston?
None at all.
In the morning, you may have gone to a barber's shop and had a shave. This evening, you may have returned subconsciously to Cannon Street. The sight of the station clock giving the usual hour of your return may have been the thing that brought your memory back. After all, you're not really clear about the journey.
I've told you I did feel tired and drowsy in the train.
And I think that's probably what happened. Your memory began to go wrong at Cannon Street. You may have got out of the train at a station before Bromley. If your memory was failing, then strange surroundings like that would probably make the lapse complete. You'd just walk aimlessly away.
But where to for all that time?
Oh, that's something we don't know at present. In the morning, after a good night's sleep, you may remember some little thing that'll piece the rest. Naturally, you feel disturbed and worried. I'll send you round something to settle you down when you go to bed. I look in about 10 a.m.
Well, I must leave for the bank at 8. I promised the manager I'd be there early.
I wouldn't go to the bank tomorrow if I were you. Have a quiet day. Don't worry. Do the garden. Go for a walk. As I say, I don't think for a moment there'll be any return of this.
There's one thing that's worrying me a bit, Doctor, about the bank. It's practically certain I shall be manager of the Eastbourne branch next year. It's a good branch and a good appointment, but it may affect things very much if the directors hear about this. Naturally, I don't expect you to make a false statement, but is there any way of preventing the bank from knowing what happened?
Well, I understood from Mrs. Preston that they do know. Didn't you tell the manager on the phone, Mrs. Preston?
Well, I had to. What else could I say?
You only said I hadn't come home. I mean, you never mentioned lost memory.
Of course I didn't. I didn't know.
Supposing I said there was some misunderstanding. If I say I spent the night with friends and my wife had forgotten, or I had forgotten to tell her.
Well, that's entirely up to you.
You wouldn't say it was my duty to tell them what actually happened.
It's no affair of mine what you decide to say, Mr. Preston. I'm only concerned if I'm asked for a certificate.
Well, you won't be. I'll ring the manager in the morning and explain. I know you support me in that, Janet.
I'll do whatever you think right, David. Oh, I wonder if that's the police sergeant.
You rang up to say I was home?
Yes, just before I rang the doctor.
It's not a thing the police have to do anything about, is it, Doctor?
Oh, no, not now that you're home and quite well.
Ask him in, Janet.
Well, go to bed early and have a good rest. I'll come in about 10 tomorrow morning.
It's Major Watson, David.
Oh, hello, Major. Come along in. Do you know Major Watson, Doctor? President of our social club.
Yes, how are you, Major?
I'm pretty good, thanks. Saw you at the Christmas dance of ours, didn't I?
Yes, I came as a guest.
It's the best club for miles around. Bridge, billiards, everything. We've just been running a sweepstake on the Derby to raise funds for a new hard tennis court next summer. Collected over £500. Club take 20%, so we didn't do too badly.
Very well indeed.
I'd sell you a ticket if we hadn't closed on Sunday for the draw tomorrow.
Well, if I'm a member next year, I'll have a chance of winning it. Good night, Mr. Preston.
Night, Doctor.
Good night. Good night.
We'll have your name up for election at the committee next Tuesday. There won't be any trouble with a chap like you.
I'll try and behave myself. Good night.
I'll see you to the door, Doctor.
Thank you.
Nice chap.
Yes.
What's he here for? Aren't you well?
Oh, nothing much, just a bit of tummy trouble, that's all.
I wondered why you weren't on the train this morning. Been at home all day?
No. As a matter of fact, I spent last night with friends. Something I had for supper disagreed with me, so I stayed the night with them. I've only just got home.
You say you spent last night with friends?
Yes.
You mean you slept the night with them?
I've just told you, some old friends on the other side of London. I go there now and then.
I came to see you about the sweepstake money. You took it away from the club last night, didn't you? What? Robinson, the club steward, said you were there in the office at 10 o'clock. You must have been pretty late for dinner with those friends of yours on the other side of London if you didn't leave the club till after 10. You did go to the club last night and take the money, didn't you?
I told you I spent the night with friends.
You never went to the club at all?
No!
Good heavens.
What did this club steward tell you?
Whatever he told me, it was a lie and the man's a dirty low-down thief.
What did he tell you?
He came round to my house last night to leave the keys because he was going off on his holidays today. He said just as he was going out, he saw a light in the office. He thought he had left it on by mistake, so he went in to turn it out and found you there, at the safe. He said it was open and he saw the sweepstake money, all those bundles of notes on a chair. He said you told him you weren't happy about leaving all that money in that small safe, and you're going to take care of it till the prizes were paid out. Do you mean that's all a lie?
I told you I wasn't there.
Robber had it all so smooth and pat, I never doubted him. He was artful enough to say he quite agreed with you taking it because he thought himself it was too much to leave in that small safe. Then, just when he was going, he slipped in a bit that I understand.
Well, what was that?
He said you acted queer and lost your temper and told him to get out and mind his own business. Well, knowing you never liked the fellow, I didn't doubt that either.
Are you certain the money's gone?
Of course I'm certain. I went round this evening. £515 of club money, members' money, with a draw tomorrow night. Oh, we must get the police onto him at once. They pick him up quickly. There's a chance he won't have time to spend it. Hey, could I use your phone?
Major Watson, don't do anything tonight.
Don't do anything? What do you mean?
The scandal.
Scandal? It's a dirty, bare-faced robbery. He tries to throw it onto you, and you say don't do anything.
There may be some mistake, some misunderstanding.
How can there be a mistake? The money's gone.
It may not have been stolen.
But if Robinson didn't take it, who did?
I don't know. If there's a mistake, then it would be a terrible thing to put the police onto Robinson and accuse him if he's innocent.
Huh? Well, what's your idea? Sit back and talk and let the dirty skunk get away with it? You know we aren't insured against losing money.
I tell you, I feel responsible.
Well, it beats me. You never liked the man. You never trusted him. And when he does the dirty on us, you want to cover him up.
I'm tired tonight, Major. I've had a bad day. I'm not well.
Do you suppose I'm well after this? What are we going to tell the subcommittee tomorrow night when we meet to draw the horses?
Will you wait until the morning, Major? Let's decide then.
And give him another clear night for his getaway.
It's very serious to accuse a man until we're certain.
What are we going to know in the morning that we don't know now? I thought you were a businessman. I thought you put the club above everything.
I'll ring you first thing in the morning.
I'll probably ring you before you ring me. I'm president of the club, and I've got my own responsibilities.
David? It's terrible, isn't it?
How did you know?
Didn't Major Watson tell you? They found Robinson, the club steward, this evening, in that little wood by the pond on the common. He's been murdered.
Of a shock, this Robinson business.
Yes, Inspector.
I never met the chap myself. A stranger around here, wasn't he?
Yes, he came from the north, I think.
Yes, I got a bit about him from Major Watson this morning. Lived in rooms just off the common. Lonely sort of chap, by all accounts. The landlady says he's got a brother somewhere, but we haven't traced him yet. You're the treasurer of the club, aren't you?
Yes, that's right.
I suppose you knew him pretty well.
Only as club steward. He would bring me the accounts and I'd check them over and pay the money into the bank.
Were they always in order? No trouble?
No, none at all. He wasn't a good bookkeeper. There were small mistakes and additions, but nothing deliberate.
Did he do everything in the club?
There's a woman who does the cooking and a little fellow who works in the kitchen weekends. He works at the hospital the rest of the week, so Robinson was practically on his own.
What's the name of the cook?
Mrs. Pritchett.
And the name of the other chap?
I don't remember.
Yeah, I suppose I could contact him at the hospital.
Of course.
Major Watson told me a strange story. I think he saw you last night.
Yes, he came in.
From his account, this fellow Robinson had some idea of involving you, Mr. Preston.
Yes, Major Watson told me.
Well, if he did think he could involve you, he certainly wasn't in luck. Because Major Watson says you were staying with friends on the other side of London that night. Of course, we have to check up on everything in a case like this. It's only a routine matter, but if you'll just give me the name and address of the people you stayed with on Monday night, we can clear it up right away.
I spent that night with an old friend. His name is Wainwright.
Yes, would you give me his address, please?
Yes, 17 Manor Farm Road, Wembley.
Mm-hmm. Well, I won't keep you, Mr. Preston. They'll need you at the inquest because this story Robinson told Major Watson will come in as evidence, but you'll know in good time. It's bad luck on your club. Were you insured against this kind of robbery?
No, they won't insure money.
Oh, let's hope they get it back for you.
I'll see you out.
And that's all right. Don't you trouble.
Is that Wembley 7294? I want to speak to Mr. Wainwright, please. What? When did he go away? Last Saturday. I must get in touch with him. It's very urgent. But you must know the hotel he's staying at. I see. No, there's no message. Goodbye.
How are you feeling?
All right, thanks.
You have a good night? Did you sleep?
No, I didn't sleep.
I didn't think you would. That's why I wanted to send you something.
You've heard what's happened?
No.
It was in the paper.
Oh, you mean that club steward? Yes, it was quite close to where I live. I didn't know a thing about it till I saw the paper this morning. Well, have you been able to piece things together at all?
No.
No small thought or memory that might help us?
No, there's nothing.
Should we try running through things again, quietly and slowly, to see whether perhaps...
Why don't you say what's in your own mind and be done with it?
I know exactly what you're thinking. Every imaginative person who suffers a lapse of memory fills the blank period in with all kinds of things that might have happened. But it's absurd to connect this matter of the club steward with yourself.
Why is it absurd?
Because a person suffering from lost memory still retains his own character, Mr. Preston. If a criminal lunatic lost his memory, he'd probably continue to behave like a criminal lunatic. But a normal, honest man would continue to behave normally and honestly.
Well, suppose a normal, honest man hated somebody. Wouldn't he go on hating that person subconsciously when his memory had gone?
Oh, if he really hated a person, then yes, I imagine he would. But you didn't hate this man, Robinson.
I did hate him. How can I explain it? But from the day he came to the club, I disliked him. He did his work well enough, but the more I saw of him, the more I loathed him. I used to look forward to going to the club, but after he came, I began to hate it. And then gradually I got a feeling that he was fated to ruin and destroy me.
That's why I told you to stay home today and rest. Imagination can play cruel tricks.
You don't think I'm suddenly imagining all this? For months now, I wake up in the night fuming at what this man has done to destroy my pleasure in the club, wondering what I can do to get rid of him.
But you've got to be sensible. You never in your wildest moment thought of murdering him, did you?
Naturally, I didn't.
Then you're not very likely to have murdered him on Monday night.
Do you know what happened on the Monday night? A few hours before he died, he told Major Watson he saw me in the club taking that sweepstake money.
Well, you can prove you didn't do that either.
How can I?
By common sense and reason. If a man were desperately in need of money, then it's possible he might be drawn subconsciously to a place where money could be found.
That is possible.
What if he definitely had theft in mind before his lapse of memory?
You told me that sleep might help me to remember.
Well, there's no certainty. A lapse of memory doesn't run to rule like an attack of lumbago or chickenpox.
I was dead tired when I went to bed, but I fought all I could to keep myself awake.
Then you went to sleep and dreamt every horrible thing on earth.
I was on the common. I was walking along the asphalt path beside the pond in a desperate kind of fear. And this man Robinson was following me, creeping along in the dark like a fat grey slug. I went between the trees and down the steps of one of those dugouts. And there was a heap of old sandbags in one corner and a square of that tarred roofing stuff. I put the money under the square and emptied some sand over it, and all the time I could hear him up there, roaming about in the dead leaves. Then I went up the steps and looked out. I could just see him going into the wood, and I followed him.
When did you know he'd been murdered?
Last night when somebody called on my wife.
Did this person tell your wife how it was committed?
I didn't ask her.
How did it happen when it came back to you last night?
I followed him into the wood, and then I tore my mind away from it. It was too horrible.
You see, perfect autosuggestion. Doesn't that make you see reason? You dreamt what you were told by your wife.
I wish I could believe that.
You added to the dream what Major Watson told you about the stolen money, and you woke up when your information about the details came to an end.
What makes you so certain that I dreamt it?
Because it's the kind of dream a man would have after your experience.
You said my memory might return, so you can't be really certain.
Well, I can only weigh the two things together and go for the one that's more probable.
If I were asked point blank whether I remember anything of those last... If anybody in authority were to ask me on my oath, would it be honest to say that I still remember nothing?
In your place, I certainly would. Whether it was honest, I don't know, but that's what I would do if I were questioned.
I have been questioned.
When?
Oh, just now, an inspector came to see me. He wanted to know where I was that night.
You didn't tell him all this?
No.
Did you mention this loss of memory?
No, I didn't do that. You see, I told Major Watson I spent the night with friends. He told the police, and they came to ask me the name and address of the people I stayed with.
What did you say?
I told him I spent Monday night in Wembley with a man named Wainwright. He's my best and oldest friend. He'd do anything for me as I would for him. I knew if I rang him up and asked him to tell the police, if they inquired, that I was with him that night. Then he'd do it without question.
Did he agree to it?
A caretaker answered the phone. Wainwright went off on a motor tour on Saturday morning. I might have known something like that would happen. What do you think I ought to do, Doctor? If I ring this inspector and get him round, what shall I tell him?
I wouldn't tell him anything if I were you, until you've had proper advice.
In what way?
I know the first thing I'd do myself would be to get a good solicitor. Most people round here go to Mr. Petherbridge.
Mr. Preston, it's a thousand pities that you felt it necessary to mislead the police with an untrue statement. It makes it very difficult.
It was Dr. Sparling who said I ought to have some help.
Yes, I think Dr. Sparling behaved very wisely.
Now, of course, I rely entirely on you.
Yes. I shall be obliged to ask you some questions that may seem unpleasant, but a legal adviser must be in possession of the entire truth before he can decide upon the best means of defense.
If Dr. Sparling told you everything I told him, then you have the entire truth.
Mr. Petherbridge knows everything you told me last night and this morning.
Will you make one point quite clear to me? If a man committed a crime in a period of lost memory, would it be judged like a crime committed by a man in a normal condition?
That's extremely difficult to answer, Mr. Preston.
You don't believe that I did lose my memory?
I didn't say that, Mr. Preston. If you tell me, upon your honor, that you did in fact lose your memory, then I accept it without question.
I think there's another thing in Mr. Preston's mind. I told you he had some impressions. Personally, I think it was a dream last night.
Yes. Well, a man can imagine all kinds of things, but there is a chance of his memory coming back in fragments, or even completely.
You mean it may be difficult to decide what part is imaginary and what part is true? Well, it's easy enough to settle about this dream last night. Simply by going to those dugouts and seeing whether the money's there.
You know, I think that would be most unwise. We should be inviting suspicion. In any case, even if the money's not there,
it would settle Mr. Preston's mind.
Yes, I know, but that's not the important issue. A dream which turns out to be imaginary is no proof of a man's innocence. Material witnesses and definite clues are the factors that really count.
What clues have they got?
I don't know. They may have none. Even if they have, they won't divulge them until the proper time. And my point is this, Mr. Preston. Even if your memory of those hours returns entirely, and we know that you had no connection with this crime at all, we must still produce material witnesses to prove it. People who can declare definitely that you were not at the place of murder at the time in question.
I don't think for a moment he had anything to do with it. But if his memory returned completely, then how much should he tell the police?
In that case, we must be guided entirely by counsel engaged to defend him. In the meantime, Mr. Preston, I strongly advise you to say nothing to the police but the bare fact that you lost your memory. I'm concerned at the moment with the question of clues. Now, is there any personal property that you can't account for? Any small things that you had with you before you lost your memory, which you're missing now?
Your gloves and a handkerchief, David. You see, he usually carries two. One folded in his breast pocket and one tucked in his sleeve.
The one in the breast pocket was there. I can't swear that I had the other at all, but I think I did.
Can you describe the gloves?
Brown leather, almost new.
Mm. Had the handkerchief your name upon it?
My initials, DHP.
Oh, he slept in the train. He may have left them there.
Well, Mr. Preston, at the moment there's only one thing to advise. Absolute frankness. I suggest that we communicate with the police at once and tell them that you wish to correct your previous statement. You'll then recount to them in every detail that you can remember of your movements between leaving home on Monday morning and your return on Tuesday night. Only that. Nothing at all about what you may have recollected or imagined since.
What will they do then?
I don't know. It depends on the extent to which they accept your husband's statement that he did actually lose his memory.
But he did. Well, we know that.
We have to prove it, Mrs. Preston. Normally, one does that by establishing an alibi. Unhappily, your husband sought to prove a false one, and we've no means of telling what view the police will take of it. We must engage the best possible counsel to defend you.
What would it cost?
You mean the counsel's fee or the whole defense?
Oh, the whole defense.
Really, it's very hard to say.
Oh, excuse me.
Oh, I'm sorry to disturb you again, Mrs. Preston. Is Mr. Preston in? I'd like another word with him, if I may.
So, would you come in?
Oh, good morning, Inspector.
Good morning, Mr. Petheridge.
Mr. Preston has asked me to act for him. You know Dr. Sparling?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning, Inspector.
Well, I expect you know why I called again, Mr. Preston.
Yes.
Our Wembley station called at Mr. Wainwright's house.
Yes, I know. Mr. Wainwright left for his holidays on Saturday.
Yes. If you knew Mr. Wainwright had gone away, I'm wondering why you told me you stayed with him.
I didn't know.
You mean you didn't know when you told me this morning?
That's correct.
If you'll excuse me, Inspector, wouldn't it be best if we...
Oh, it's quite all right, Mr. Petheridge. This is just an informal talk, that's all. I don't intend to make any notes. The caretaker at Mr. Wainwright's house told our people that somebody rang up for Mr. Wainwright about 10 o'clock. Was that you, Mr. Preston?
Yes, I intended to ask Mr. Wainwright.
That's all right. It occurred to me you may have given that information by mistake. That you stayed with Mr. Wainwright some other time and got it mixed up with a visit to other friends on Monday night. When I called this morning, I explained I only needed the information to rule out the story Robinson told Major Watson.
Now, I'm not asking for a minute-by-minute account of everything you did that evening, because a man can't often do a thing like that when he's suddenly asked.
Well, I can't tell you anything of what I did on Monday night, or anything about Tuesday, until I came home in the evening, because I had a lapse of memory.
I see.
Mrs. Preston telephoned me at 7:30 yesterday evening and told me what had happened. I came to see Mr. Preston, had a long talk with him, and I'm convinced that what he said was true. I'd be glad to make a statement if necessary.
Mr. Preston, you know about when you lost it and when it came back?
I've been able to account for everything up to 6:15 on Monday evening at Cannon Street Station.
You don't have any little, what should we say, gleams of memory? Any little memories that couldn't belong to other times?
No, I've tried to think. There are none at all.
Did you have everything with you when you got back? Nothing missing or anything found, say, like a bus ticket or anything like that? Yeah. Anything that might show where you went or what you did?
No. I went through all my pockets in the hope of finding something. There was nothing.
About that safe in the clubhouse, Mr. Preston, do you happen to know how many keys there are to it?
There are three. Major Watson has one. I've got one, and there's another kept at the bank down here.
The steward didn't have one, then?
Oh, no. He had a till of his own.
Do you drop in sometimes after the steward closes up for the night?
Occasionally.
You've no recollection at all of going there on Monday night?
No.
Well, now, I wonder if you'd just walk round to the station with me. You know, it's one of our routines to take down a statement from anybody in any way concerned in an affair like this. It's just a formality. I've taken one from Major Watson this morning. I shall be taking quite a few more.
I'll do whatever you need.
Yes, it won't take long.
Shall I be coming back again?
Oh, yes, of course. I imagine you were wearing what you might call a city suit on Monday.
Yes.
Do you mind if we take that along and the shoes you're wearing? It's just another bit of routine they make us do.
If you need them, yes. I'll get them.
Yes, we'll be with you in a few minutes, Mr. Betheridge. I've got my car outside.
Good morning, Doctor. I came to see Preston.
I don't think you can see him now.
Why? Is he bad?
No, he's with the police inspector upstairs.
Oh. Why upstairs?
I think you'll have to see him some other time.
It was about the club account books. He keeps them here.
You had better speak to Mr. Petherbridge here about that.
I don't think it would be wise to touch anything without police authority. Well, it's about our sweepstake. Preston's got a list of members and what they pay for tickets. We've got a subcommittee meeting tonight. Who just knows what's going to happen? If you explain at the police station, I'm sure they'll do what they can. Why can't I see him?
He's not well.
I thought he looked funny last night. It's queer, isn't it?
What exactly do you mean?
Why, the whole thing. He told me last night he stayed with friends on Monday, somewhere the other side of London. But I heard just now the police were looking for him.
Who told you that?
Chap on the bus. Police rang up the hospital, wanting to know if Preston was there.
You mustn't pay any attention to anything Mr. Preston may have said yesterday evening, because he was ill.
He's always been all right. What's wrong with him? He suffered a lapse of memory on Monday night. Good heavens, that's a bit thin, isn't it? And what do you mean by that? Well, I mean it's a bit thin, that's all. What's he told the police? He's told them the truth. Poor old Preston, I'd never have thought it. And yet it always does seem to be that kind of fellow. I mean, when you look at their photos in the paper, can't you at least expect? Have they got the money back? I'm not aware that Mr. Preston had anything whatever to do with the money. Or the murder. But you said he'd told the truth. That he lost his memory on Monday night. But does that mean that they haven't got the money back yet? I don't know. The police have got that in hand. Oh, well, it can't be far away. Aren't you helping the police? Mr. Preston has asked me to act for him. Oh? But if he didn't have anything to do with it, what's he want you for? For that very reason, Major Watson. It sometimes happens that an innocent man needs more protection than a guilty one.
Oh, good morning, Major Watson. The inspector said, would you mind coming up for a minute, Mr. Petherbridge? My husband's given him permission to look round his room, and he'd like you to be there.
Yes, I'll come.
Excuse us, Major.
Do you think they'll believe this loss of memory idea, Doctor?
Why not, if it's true? Certainly I do. I've had a good deal of experience in judging people, and I'll stake my reputation on my opinion of Preston.
But you mean he really did lose his memory?
I've told you so.
Could a fellow do all this when his memory's gone?
It's possible, but I don't believe he did.
What would they call it? Insane or something like that? Now, I'm president of the club, and I've got to see that money back. Well, I mean, suppose he gets off. Suppose they say he's innocent. Does that mean he can keep the money?
Why are you so convinced that he took the money?
Preston was hard up. He borrowed money all round the club. I lent him £50 myself.
Did he pay you all back?
Oh, he paid us back in time. But I never knew a fellow get clean out of debt once he started borrowing. You're a man of the world, you know that. Another thing, he hated the steward. Pulling that story about staying Monday night with friends on the other side of London.
A man with a dark space in his memory can say anything on the spur of the moment.
I can't disturb him now.
Well, it's about this trouble, this murder.
Oh. You'd better come in.
You see, I made quite an old friend of Mr. Preston's, and I thought I might be able to help him.
I think I know most of my husband's friends.
Well, I expect you do. But I don't suppose Dave ever told you about me.
Dave?
Mr. Preston. He always let me call him Dave. I'm sorry. Is he in trouble about this murder? I mean, really in trouble. Because if he is, I want to help him, and I think I can.
Then you'd better sit down.
Oh, thank you. You live in a nice house.
Yes. You haven't told me your name.
It's Miss Dobson, Peggy Dobson. I work with my brother and sister at the Feathers in River Lane, just off Queen Victoria Street in the city, you know.
The Feathers?
It's a public house, our own place.
What is it that you want to say?
Well, I came down as quickly as I could because I only heard about this trouble at lunchtime.
Mr. Preston's name hasn't been in the papers. How did you know he was in trouble?
Well, a young man who has lunch at our place comes from down here, and he told us how they took Mr. Preston round to the police station yesterday. Of course, we'd read about this awful murder in the papers, but even if they had mentioned him, we might never have known it was our Mr. Preston.
Your Mr. Preston?
I know it's funny, but we've known him all these years, and we never knew where he came from. We only realized this when this young man said, "You know that fellow Preston who comes here in the evening? They're after him for that Bromley murder." And of course I saw I'd better come down here at once. Well, he told me the road, but I had to ask a policeman up there at the corner which house it was. Gave me such a queer look, I knew things must be bad.
Yes, they are bad. Why did you come? What's this about?
Well, everything. Last Monday night. You see, Mr. Preston's been coming to our place, well, ever since the war. He just drops in of an evening on his way home. Look, if you think there's anything in it, you're wrong, because there isn't. I'm not the sort that runs after other people's husbands, and I never did.
I didn't suggest it, Miss Dobson.
No, but you're looking it. Anybody can see that. It's no good talking to you if you aren't going to listen. Well, why don't you bring him down and let me tell him?
I've told you, my husband's very tired and trying to rest. If you've anything to say, you can tell me.
The Feathers is respectable. You can ask anybody. All he ever had was a glass of sherry and a sandwich, maybe. Sometimes we just sit round chatting in our private room.
Your private room?
Because he came before we opened, that's why. Sometimes we go into the saloon bar and have a game of darts. But he always left on the stroke of six to catch his train at Cannon Street.
You say he's done this for a long time?
Oh, every evening regular. Getting on for 5 years now. Oh, and I'm sure it does him good. Because he looks so tired and worried sometimes when he comes in. But he always goes away feeling better. Don't you think he's been looking bad lately?
Yes. Yes, he has been rather worried recently.
Well, we thought he looked specially tired on Monday night, so I gave him a Bovril sandwich with his glass of sherry. Then we went into the saloon bar for a game of darts. We were laughing and joking. And then the strangest thing happened. There's a little van that brings our sandwiches from a place in Hornsey. Well, it finished unloading, and just as it was starting off, it had a terrific backfire, you know, like a gun going off. Oh, we all jumped because it startled us, and Mr. Preston did too. He turned his head quickly, and when he turned it back, he looked different.
How do you mean he looked different?
His face just went different. He looked round as if he didn't know where he was, and dropped the dart he had in his hand and sat down. Of course, it scared us because we thought he was suddenly taken ill. But he kept saying he was quite all right, in a funny sort of a way. Then he got up and he said, "You'd better go down to the dugout."
What dugout?
I don't know. We never had a dugout. But it made us see what had happened. We knew he was an air raid warden in the war, and he suddenly thought it was still on. We talked to him and said it was all right, but he just kind of mumbled and kept shaking his head. We didn't know what to do.
Why didn't you telephone and tell me?
Well, how could we? He never told us where he lived, and there are crowds of Prestons in the telephone book. My brother Joe took him up to the spare bedroom and made him lie down, hoping he'd get all right.
But you could have sent for a doctor.
We did think about that. We even thought about the police. But he was sleeping so quietly, and... well, we thought it best to wait and see what happened when he woke up. Joe and I looked in twice during the night. He was still sound asleep. But he woke up quite easily when I took him a cup of tea in the morning. He was still very funny, though. He still didn't seem to know where he lived or the place he worked. He didn't seem to care or try to think when we asked him. He washed and shaved himself with Joe's razor quite naturally. But his mind was still all mixed up on the war. He kept saying it was a quiet day with no alarms. But now and then he'd say, "Listen, here's one coming." Or something like that. He was thinking of the fly bombs all the time. We gave him some breakfast and made him stay quiet in his room. But Joe said if he wasn't any better by the evening, we'd have to tell the police.
You knew that his bank was quite close. Why didn't you tell them?
We didn't know. Of course, we knew he worked in a bank, but we didn't know where.
Yes, the doctor said something like that might be possible. What did he do the whole day?
Well, he just sat about, up there in the bedroom. Soon after 5... Joe said the only thing to do was to get him quietly round to the police station and tell them what had happened. But that was the strangest part of all. We sat in the saloon bar, and we all had a sherry. And all of a sudden, he began to change. He looked puzzled and restless, and then he sort of braced himself up and said, "Aren't we going to finish our game of darts?" You see, we were sitting round in the same room at the same time of the evening, drinking sherry just like we did the night before. He stood up, took one of the darts and said, "Come on, what are we waiting for?" Well, it was kind of uncanny standing round playing darts just as if nothing had happened. You know, trying to make jokes in ordinary conversation. Then he suddenly said, "Good heavens, it's time I went." Well, we didn't like him going off like that alone, but he looked so ordinary and natural when he got his coat off the peg that we almost thought we were the strange ones. Joe did think perhaps he ought to walk down.
I just remembered something, Janet.
Hello.
Why did you come here?
Well, I heard you were in trouble, Dave.
How did you know?
A young man who comes from down here said the police had you round yesterday.
Miss Dobson works with her brother and sister at a place where I drink a glass of sherry on my way to the station in the evening.
Of course, we read about this awful murder.
I should have told you, Janet.
Oh, don't worry about that, David. Listen to what Miss Dobson has to tell you.
I saw at once I'd got to find out where you lived and come down and help you.
How can you help me?
Miss Dobson says you spent the whole of Monday night at their hotel.
You stayed the whole night at the Feathers, Dave. Directly I tell them that, they can't go after you anymore.
But I left your place at 6 o'clock, when St. Paul's was striking 6.
That's it, you didn't. I mean, not on the same day as you came in. You didn't come out until the murder was all over.
I came into the Feathers just after 5 on Monday evening. I left your house at 6 o'clock, while the clock was striking. The police know that.
The police never came near our place. How can they know?
Because I told them... everything I remember just as it happened.
Look, Dave, I know what I'm talking about, and you've got the whole thing mixed up. It doesn't matter what you say or think. Directly I've been and told the police, your worries are over.
Do the police know that you've come here?
Not yet, but they jolly soon will.
Well, you shouldn't have come here. I must go back to my room.
David! Oh, excuse me.
Good evening, Mr. Preston. Is your husband at home?
Good evening, Inspector. He's just gone upstairs. But I want you to hear what this young lady has to say.
Yeah. Oh, I expect you're Miss Dobson. I heard you'd come down. I've been having a talk with your brother and sister at the Feathers this afternoon.
Oh, you have you?
Mr. Preston told us yesterday he called in at the Feathers that night.
But you know, he was so definite about leaving at 6 o'clock that it rather put us off the track at first. Oh, Mrs. Preston, I'm sure this must be a relief to you. We never really thought your husband was involved. The thing that's been puzzling us was the coincidence of someone trying to plant a robbery on a man the very night he's missing from home. As a matter of fact, it was Mr. Preston who helped us there when he mentioned the little fellow who worked at the hospital in the evenings and the club kitchen weekends. I saw something in that because the hospital knew he was missing at 9 o'clock and the club safe was robbed at 10. Yeah, we've got a few things to clear up. But as far as Mr. Preston's concerned, there's nothing more to worry about. It's perfectly all right.
Oh, it's perfectly all right, is it? You think you can walk in here smiling and everything's all right? I'm sorry, Mrs. Preston. I'll go now. I do hope he'll be all right. Good night.
Good night, and thank you so much for coming down. Do you want me for anything else, Inspector?
No, there's nothing. Thank you.
Well, you know where to find me if you do.
Inspector, I want to make you understand. For 2 days and 2 nights, my husband has believed himself to be a criminal lunatic, waiting to be taken away and locked up for the rest of his life. Don't you realize what that's done to him?
I do, Mrs. Preston, yes. I only wish it could have been avoided.
He's always lived so quietly. He only wanted to do his work and enjoy his evenings and be happy with his friends. A thing like this, it's nearly driven him mad. He wouldn't even listen to what Miss Dobson had to say. You've got to convince him. I want you to go up and tell him.
Of course, Mrs. Preston, yes. I'll do whatever I can. That's why I came. Yeah, he's coming down.
Well, Inspector?
Mr. Preston, there's nothing for you to worry about. As a matter of fact, you put us on the right track when you mentioned the little fellow who worked in the club kitchen and did odd jobs at the hospital. Your club steward, Robinson, and this little chap had planned to get this money. Maybe Monday night, maybe the next, I don't know. But when they hear the club treasurer is missing, well, it's a gift. They break open the safe, share the money, and Robinson goes round to Major Watson and tries to plant it on you. Well, after that, it looks like the old story of thieves falling out. Robinson gets a knock over the head, the other chap takes the lot. They picked him up this evening over in Croydon, the money as well. All but a few pounds. Well, I'll say good night.
I'll see you out.
Yes, thank you, thank you. Good night, Mrs. Preston. Good night.
Good night.
Good heavens, it's 7 o'clock. I'll make some tea.
In tonight's presentation of Home at Seven by R.C. Sheriff, you heard the part of Mr. Preston played by Rolf Lefevre, and that of Mrs. Preston by Patricia Saunders. Stuart Brown played the part of Doc, Kerry Jordan that of Major, and Rex Garner was the inspector. Others in the cast were Adrian Egan and Joanna Palmer. Home at Seven was adapted and produced for Lux Radio Theatre by Michael Silver.